This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The computer industry is being shaken up by antitrust suits. The Federal Trade Commission filed a suit against Intel this week. The Justice Department's antitrust case against Microsoft goes to court September 8th. The events leading up to the Microsoft case are the subject of the new book, Speeding the Net. My guests are authors Joshua Quitner, a computer columnist for Time magazine, and Michelle Slatala, computer columnist for the New York Times. The two are also married. The Justice Department is accusing Microsoft of undermining consumer choice by forcing computer makers who use Microsoft's operating system Windows to also install Microsoft's browser. The browser is the software that connects your computer to the World Wide Web. Microsoft's biggest browser rival is Netscape, the company that created the first highly used browser. I asked Slatala and Quitner about the importance of the Microsoft antitrust case.
It's enormously important, not just for the computer industry, Terry, but for everybody in the world who uses a computer. Because the outcome of this suit is going to determine is the extent to which Microsoft in the future is going to be able to control the look and feel of the computer that sits on top of your desk, the look and feel of everything you do when you're sitting there typing, and basically how they're going to be able to control your whole experience as a computer user, whether it's online trying to browse the web, whether it's using software to do word processing or to crunch numbers, whether it is the way that you approach information as a user. And right now, Microsoft has a very clear direction and strategy of where it wants to go, how it wants to lead all of us computer users into the future. And the question is that a path that we're all going to have to follow? Is it a path we want to follow? Should we even have the choice?
A lot of your book tells the history of the browser and the role of the browser in this dispute between Microsoft and Netscape. The browser actually has its roots in the nonprofit world of university research. And Mark Andreessen, who created the Netscape Navigator browser, first worked in the nonprofit and of university research. Tell us a little bit about the prototype of the browser that he created when he was still doing university-related research.
Well, the irony of it is that Mark Andreessen, when he was a callow youth, an undergraduate at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, had an idea for a browser, for a software program, that in fact became the core code not only for the Netscape Navigator browser years later, but also for Microsoft's Internet Explorer browser. His idea was so good that even today, years later, both the leading competitors' code was predicated on his Mosaic browser. What he did was, sitting around in the bowels of the old oil chemistry building on campus where he and his pals worked late into the night and ordered many cheap pizzas and let the boxes stack up all around their cubicles, was an idea to create a program that would make browsing the internet really fun. The idea that you could see pictures and text, that you could hear sound, that you could, instead of typing arcane Unix commands, you could just click a button on your mouse and move around on the internet. And the Mosaic browser that Andreessen and his friends in Illinois originally wrote was fun. That was their whole purpose, to be useful, to be fun, to have what they thought of as cool, neat features that you would enjoy using it.
At the time that Andreessen co-created this early browser, he was working at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the University of Illinois. What were, for him, do you think, some of the advantages and some of the frustrations at working in a university context? Now he's a big mover in the commercial world.
I think that he was frustrated and felt, he told us he felt confined by the structure of academia. He felt that things moved slower in the academic research world than they would out in the competitive entrepreneurial world of capitalism. I think he was chomping at the bit to get out there and try his own venture. And when he graduated and he moved west to Silicon Valley to seek his fortune, he was incredibly lucky to hook up with Jim Clark, who at that time was the founder of Silicon Graphics, who had just announced that he was leaving SGI and was looking for a new brilliant venture to dabble in. And he met with Andreessen one morning very early at a coffee shop in Silicon Valley and heard about this Mosaic browser that Andreessen and his friends had written. And from that meeting basically grew the entire extraordinary history of Netscape.
When Marc Andreessen and Jim Clark co-founded Netscape, did they have any idea of where the money was going to be in the corporation? For example, when Andreessen was working on Mosaic, the kind of prototype of Netscape Navigator, I think the software was just basically put on the internet and people could get it for free. People could do whatever they wanted to with it for free. That was basically the way it was done then, when most of the people who had access to the internet were university academics and researchers and doctors and so on. It wasn't considered a big profit-making center, as people now seem to hope it will be. So given that the browser software at the time was on the internet for access free, where did they think the money was going to be?
They had only the fuzziest idea about where the money was going to come from. But keep in mind that back in 1994, they were in really good company. Everybody was starting to get excited about the internet, but nobody knew how to make money off it or understood what would be a workable business model. Clark, in early 1994, thought that publishing might be a viable business model on the internet. And one of his first things was to fly east and hold a number of meetings with big media and publishing companies to try to convince them to bring their content onto the newly emerging World Wide Web and to use the software that Netscape was creating to translate that content to the new medium.
They knew that the browser was something that they would be giving away for free, and they would create a mass market, they hoped, for the web. What people would pay for would be the server side. Companies that would want to put their wares online, whether they were banks or L.L. Bean or Time Magazine, would pay a lot of money to run reliable, supported software. Server code, I think, sells upwards of, could sell for $15,000 or more. And they knew that if they had that kind of a thing going, they would be in the money over time.
How financially successful was this scheme?
In the short term, it wasn't at all financially successful because 18 months after they had founded the company and were getting ready to go public, they had yet to have shown a profit. They had huge revenues, but they also had huge expenses. That's what made it so amazing in August of 1995 when Netscape went public and became overnight the darling of Wall Street and basically spawned an entire technological stampede on Wall Street by having the best public offering of any company in its class.
How do you explain that disparity between what their success rate actually was at the time and the amount of investors that wanted to join up early on?
Hype. There was a huge amount of hype by then surrounding the internet. Internet as a word, the internet as a cultural phenomenon, the internet as a possible new medium that we could profit off of, the internet as an economic force that would drive us into a lucrative technological future in the next century. I mean, now, nearly 3 years later, some of that has panned out, a lot of it hasn't. But there was an enormous amount of enthusiasm, not only on Wall Street, but in almost any segment of society and the economy over anything that had to do with the online world.
My guests are Michelle Slatala and Joshua Quittner, authors of the new book Speeding the Net. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are computer columnists Joshua Quittner and Michelle Slatala, authors of Speeding the Net, about the rivalry between Microsoft and Netscape. You say in your new book, Speeding the Net, that Netscape's success also became its problem in the sense that Netscape's success inspired Microsoft to come up with a browser that would be in its computers. And then Microsoft became this huge competitor for Netscape. How did Microsoft make the decision to come up with its own browser for its Windows program?
Well, I actually think that Microsoft is a big, smart company. They weren't quite as asleep at the switch as everyone thought. Even though Bill Gates didn't really mention the word internet in his big book, The Road Ahead, he knew it was out there. The question was, how big was it going to be? So Microsoft had various people down at its extremities who were definitely very, very net savvy, web savvy. There were guys who were hanging out on the browser forum on Usenet that Andreessen and his buddies were frequenting. So they all knew what was going on. The question was, at what point would Gates turn the company around and say, we're going to get behind this internet thing and get behind it in a big way?
And I would say that by late 1994, it was very clear to Gates and everyone else at Microsoft that they were going to need a browser and they were going to need it fast. In fact, they were going to need it by the time they came out with Windows 95, whose launch date had been firmly pushed back to August of 1995 by that point. Late in 1994 meant that Gates had to go shopping for browser code. There was just no time in that kind of a schedule for Microsoft to create its own internet browser from scratch. At that time, Microsoft approached Jim Clark at Netscape and tried to open up negotiations about licensing Netscape's Navigator code. Now, Clark was very suspicious of Microsoft and was not at all interested in doing that and rebuffed them very clearly. In the end, Microsoft ended up licensing the original Mosaic code that Andreessen and his friends had written at the University of Illinois and made that the foundation of the first version of the Microsoft Internet Explorer browser that debuted with Windows 95.
I guess that's a real paradox for Andreessen.
Yeah, except the way Andreessen and the other guys who worked on that original browser looked at it was, when they went to build Mosaic, the commercial version of Mosaic, later to be called Netscape, Jim Clark was very nervous that they would be accused basically of intellectual theft, of stealing their own baby. So they had to start out all over again and write a browser from scratch. Other people might think, oh my God, this is a nightmare. We've got to do this thing from scratch. These guys, the young hackers at Netscape, said, this is great because we know all the problems that plagued that first version that we wrote back in our college days. Now we can write a whole new one that's going to be much, much stronger and much, much better suited to the real conditions, the online conditions that we have since learned about.
How much of an edge has the Microsoft browser gotten over the Netscape browser?
The reality is the browsers are virtually the same. And politically, I'm predisposed to use Netscape's browser because I believe in the underdog. I believe that they should be able to enjoy my business because they were the pioneers that went out there and figured things out first. However, I'm sorry to admit that increasingly, since I've moved over to a Windows machine, when no one is looking, I will click on the little blue E because Microsoft is smart enough to put their browser right out in front on their desktop to make it always, always available to its users. Of course, the Justice Department doesn't say that smart so much as illegal, as unfair.
So now Microsoft has this antitrust suit facing it. Janet Reno has said Microsoft is unlawfully taking advantage of its Windows monopoly to protect and extend that monopoly and undermine consumer choice. What's going to be the difference for consumers whether Microsoft wins or loses this case? What difference will it make to computer users?
The irony is that in the short term, if Microsoft is left unchecked, in the short term, not only will there be no tangible difference from the consumer perspective, it'll probably be a good thing. I mean, when I send when I send documents to Michelle, if she's using WordPerfect and I'm using Word, we've got a problem. It's much better for both using the same programs because then I can attach a Word document and she'll be able to open it up in Word. A single standard is something that's very beneficial for all computer users. The big problem is looking out 3, 4, 5 years down the road. If Microsoft is left unchecked and Microsoft is allowed to run over any competitor when they see fit, sooner or later people are going to stop competing. The guys, the Mark Andreessens of the future, the smart young folks who are computer programmers are going to think, well, my real choice here is I can go out and innovate, but I'm really just going to end up working for Microsoft anyway, so what's the point? I think I'm going to get into banking, or I think I'm going to go work in a lumber yard. There's no percentage in it for me. I'm not going to work 140 hours a week to create this marvelous thing if, by the time I bring it to market, Microsoft is just going to gobble it up. And even worse, the venture capitalists aren't going to back the Mark Andreessens of the future if they think that the only shot, the only play is to sell out to Microsoft.
The Antitrust Act was enacted before the turn of the century. How well do you think it holds up for today's computer technology?
I think that it's very applicable to today's computer technology. I mean, the Antitrust Act was passed back in the 1800s before we had a lot of the technologies that it's governed. It was passed before we had airplanes. It was passed before, AT&T had become a huge monopoly with modern technology. And the law served very well as a tool that was able to referee and regulate these problems.
What do you think will happen to Netscape, depending on whether Microsoft wins or loses?
At this point, it may not matter that much if Microsoft wins or loses, because Netscape has been very deftly repositioning itself and no longer relies on revenues from the browser to the same extent that it did in the past. It's really reinvented itself as kind of an amalgam of an emerging media company that sells server-side software, that is making deals with the big search engines, and is hopefully harnessing the power of having such a huge audience come to its website. It's a company that is barely even 4 years old and has already gone through a number of different iterations and seems to be pretty fast on its feet.
What Netscape has done is it's really reinvented itself as a content company, which frankly is something it said it would never do. But when you got right down to it, Netscape realizes that it commands most of the eyeballs. Still more than half of the people who come online with a Netscape browser, and most of them leave the default in place, so they go right to Netscape's homepage. They can make a lot of loot off of that advantage. And what they're really trying to do now is push that advantage and make themselves one of the so-called portals to the internet, where there's a huge amount of money to be made. In fact, Jim Barksdale is talking about how he's really happy that they've been able to wean themselves off the browser money, which he likens to drug money.
Why?
Because he felt that it was never going to last forever. It was based on sort of one-shot deals, but that it's not a real business.
I have a question about your own computer use. You have strong feelings about Netscape and Microsoft. And I just want to go over here. Do you tend to choose your own computer technology based on what you believe is politically correct, or on the technology that's most convenient for you or most compatible with other people who you're interacting with?
I would have to say it's a little bit of both, or all three of those things, Terry. For a decade, I used a Mac and only used an IBM-compatible or Windows machine when I was forced to, when I was dragged kicking or screaming over to one in an office situation. But this year, for the first time, I willingly went out and bought a Windows machine. It's because I have started writing a weekly column for computer users in the New York Times, and it would really be irrelevant for me to sit there on a Mac and to describe things that I'm doing and places I'm going and software that I'm using, because 90% of the people who read my column are going to be on Windows machines and would have no frame of reference for what I'm doing. In that sense, I feel like I've been kind of forced by the marketplace to switch over so that I can be in step with the experience that other people are having, so that I can not only understand it, but can describe it to the world.
As Michelle's husband as well as collaborator, I would have to take issue with one thing she said. She did not go willingly to buy a Windows machine. It was more like we had to put the family dog to sleep.
And Josh, what about you? How is your choice controlled?
My choice is, in effect, the same as Michelle's. As journalists, we work on Macintoshes. At Time Magazine, where I write a column, everything's on a Mac, and it makes it very simple. We can actually see the pages as we lay them out. Every word that you put on your computer screen will appear in the magazine the way it did on the computer. That's the beauty of WYSIWYG. You know that acronym. What you see is what you get. I also went out and bought a Windows machine because I started writing a personal technology column on a weekly basis for the magazine, and it seemed ridiculous to be working on a platform that something under 10% of the computing populace now uses. I feel very bad about that. I apologize to all my Mac friends. I think the Macintosh makes a really great computer, but the hard part of it is, for me, I have to run lots of different programs. I've got to try out lots of different things, and they're just not being made for the Mac yet. Maybe someday they will again.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks for having us.
Joshua Quittner and Michelle Slatala are the authors of Speeding the Net, about the rivalry between Netscape and Microsoft. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.